from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia.
You should go down underneath it.
Oh, way out deep!
This is Cleats and Cuffs.
Hit it! Oh, what a hit that was! Murray!
Everything ultimate, from the field to the border, with Jeff Snyder and Nick Dark.
Hang it up there!
Here we are, Cleats Back. And Cufflinks, episode 17.
I don't know.
17, I think.
I'm tired of saying it. We're never going to say that anymore.
We're not going to say the episode number.
No, because did Mike in the Morning say that stuff?
Well, they probably did for like their first 100 episodes. Maybe we just say it on highlighted episodes.
Yeah.
Episode 25.
Prime numbers.
Episode 50.
Right.
Or just on primes.
Primes, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's actually, nice. Well, so 17, prime number. Well done.
We don't understand math. Yeah.
17 is definitely prime.
I didn't say anything about it.
Oh, okay. Only one and the number 17.
Yes.
Which are whole numbers.
Yes.
Go into the number 17.
I stand corrected.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, there's that thing you can look up with all the list of prime numbers.
Yeah.
And there's like prime numbers that are, you know, I think they're infinite, right?
Yeah, they go on for, yeah, you could, there's an infinite number of prime numbers.
But isn't it hard to understand that? Doesn't it feel like at some point there's got to be a number that gets in there somewhere? The one's got to sneak in at some point. But there's not.
No.
There's not. So prime numbers. I learned that yesterday in school.
Oh, so glad you're still going. Stay in school, kids.
Further. Stay in school. Stay in school. Okay, so you know what people don't know is actually they've seen the video because the video came out already. But we just came back from filming the ALS bucket. Ice bucket challenge.
Yeah, we did the get wet and cold for charity thing.
And we third floor with the water coming down.
Floor pour.
Outstanding accuracy. You'll see it.
Yeah, you notice when the water descends from that height.
Yeah.
And I think if it were higher, it would kind of break up more and feel more like rain, which
right.
obviously falls from an incredible height and doesn't beat you to the ground. But since it's just the third floor, you still get the impact.
Yes.
Which was nice, I thought.
Yes, and if you're doing an ice bucket challenge from the third floor, you let the ice melt. That is our tip to you.
Do not leave ice in it.
Yeah, because then it's more like
hail.
Deadly hail.
Deadly hail.
Right. So you don't want to do that. Now, first, I'm just gonna jump off for a second.
You're jumping off topic.
I'm just gonna steer away for a second.
Okay. All
before right. we get in, because we want to talk about this ALS bucket.
Yeah, we'll get into the ALS. I mean, I'm curious as to where you're headed, though.
I'm gonna jump over and say that. Today, I'm going to pick one thing that you do that drives me insane. And because I get to voice this and relieve some of my frustration with you, I will actually offer to you that you may also tell me one thing if you could find something, which maybe you can't.
That's interesting.
But I want the world to know that you are late to everything.
Well, that is
always
completely untrue.
You are late.
I am
to
early
everything.
To everything.
No. Now, see the frustration.
This is insane.
Now,
this is insane.
Now, you're late to everything. He's late. No, if you ask him for something, he says 10 minutes. That doesn't mean 10 minutes.
See, 15. That's not late to things.
That's just late. You're just
that's
late.
That's late handing in assignments, which notorious
you know,
all
you
throughout
just,
school.
You're just late.
I am early to every meeting.
No, there is one
every
time.
Meeting.
There is only one time when you are not late. Do you know what that is?
When we're meeting at the bar?
No, well, that's good too. No, you can be late to that too. There's only one time when Nick Darling is not late, and that is if you're late. If I'm late, I'll walk into the room and he'll be sitting there like, what, where you been? I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you time that up that you know if other people are going to be late, then you're on time so you can throw it back at them. But it drives me insane.
I think what you might be noticing is a phenomenon that is our relationship is so bizarrely symbiotic that the only time I'm late is when you're early. And the only time... and the only time I'm early is when you're late.
Mm.
So we're actually late the same amount of times. It just never happens at the same time.
I get that.
This could be an idea. Could be an idea there.
So do you want to move on? Let's just move on.
No, I think I think just briefly.
Oh, okay.
The thing, if I were to pick something, I'm on the spot here. I didn't
right.
know we were going to talk about things that annoyed us about one
That'd
another.
Be hard
and
to pick anyway.
I don't have enough time to delve into some of the deeper, more psychological issues.
Yeah, or things to choose from.
But yeah, that could be it. But I would say that you are often annoyingly positive.
I don't see why that's a bad thing.
It's like, hey, Jeff, fell down the stairs, broke my leg this morning. And you say, well, that will give you something to overcome.
It's true.
Good for you.
Yeah, all right. All right, well. We've had this before. Listen, when you start up a new business, which we start up many together, you have times where you're like, we're out of money, and I don't have enough change to get home. And I'm like, well, then we'll get in shape.
Take another lap around the building.
Yeah. It's a good thing. It's a good thing to be positive, Nicholas. You know that I'm the positive ions of this.
It's like working with a cheerleader.
First of all, I would be a fantastic cheerleader.
You would make an excellent cheerleader.
I wouldn't be a good top of the pyramid. I could hurt the people coming down.
That would probably be a mistake.
But and that's a goal of mine, or not a goal. That's a, what is it? Envy.
You want to be the top.
Who wouldn't
want to
be the top of the pyramid?
That's what you're going for.
Except the fact that it's the most dangerous sport in the world, so I don't ever want to do it because it's terrifying. And could you imagine throwing me? Actually, I would be safe because I just wouldn't get off the
ground. I don't even understand. People talk about. I don't know how we're getting so far afield here, but people talk about cheerleading as like, I don't want my daughter to do it because they dress in skippy outfits or they're dancing around or it's not a sport. All this stuff. Clearly not a problem. The big problem is I don't want my daughter to do it because I can't watch that.
I can't watch it.
I can't watch it.
They throw people too high in the air.
Ugh.
You shouldn't be that high in the air unless you have like
parachute.
The trapeze? Is that what it's called when they have a little safety thing on them?
The little safety harness thing. Yeah, that would be okay. But they don't have that.
Yeah, they don't have that. They have two guys who are like, I got her. So, all right. Let's talk about the episode today. We have a fantastic interview that we're looking forward to with Sean Carpenter.
Yes, from Altifotos.
Altifotos. Excited to hear what he has to say and give some insight to those who are interested in getting into photography. What it takes. Those who are interested in how what it takes to take pictures of ultimate players and ultimate. Which really, when it's hard to imagine. How they get some of these good pictures. So I'm interested.
They do a wonderful job.
We're going to talk about the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge.
Yep.
The good, the bad, the ugly of it.
Yeah.
Or is there a good, bad, and ugly?
Yeah.
And what did we have? Oh, and Johnny Manziel.
Yeah. Little Johnny Manziel.
You're putting me on the spot as a coach.
I'm going to put you on the spot as a coach a little bit with that.
I like this.
Yeah.
I like this. Okay, so what do you want to start with, ALS?
Let's start with the ALS thing. We got into it a little bit, so let's start with that a little bit.
Okay, so we just did it. When it first came out, somebody challenged me. Will Kerb tweeted at me, said, do you want to do it? And I read about it, and I said, I'm really not a big fan. What I didn't like about it was the pour ice over your head, and then you don't have to donate. I said, that's kind of cheesy. And then I listened to Mike and Mike in the morning, and they kind of switched my whole brain. But before I say what they said, and I thought, what did you think about it at first?
Yeah, I think I had a little bit of the same reaction, though. I think by the time I had read about it, enough people that I had seen had poured ice over their head and donated. So that sort of brought me around to the thing. The one thing that gives you like a little bit of a catch in there is, you're basically putting yourself out there as, look, I'm giving away stuff to charity. Watch this video of me. Kind of like it's almost like a vanity move, right? So, I wish I could remember the quote. Somebody said, that the key to charity is doing it anonymously. I actually don't necessarily agree, and we can talk about why.
Well, I like when I thought about the method they used, I respected it a bit. It's really like a multi-level marketing campaign. It's like, you must do either the challenge not to pay or pay. But if you aren't going to pay, you have to elect three more people. And then the chances, if those three people do it, there's a chance that one of them says, well, I don't want to do it, so I'll pay. So it's kind of pretty interesting. Mike and Mike, they talked about how it was nothing but a positive. Like, look, is it a cheesy campaign? Sure, it's cheesy. But this time last year, ALSA.org, that foundation, had raised, I think, $1.5 million in 30 days. And now they've raised $15 million. So who cares?
Yeah,
it's great. It's great for the thing. People are talking about ALS more than ever.
Yeah, it's a fantastic move. You look at anything, and a nonprofit has the same problems that a for-profit has. Their job is to go out and raise money, and that money is going to fund research or fund, whatever their programming is. And if that's your job, you have to find creative ways to do that. And this is an incredibly successful way to do it. It gets passed around like crazy. It's fun. So, lighten up a little bit. This is for fun. And lastly, when I come back to that vanity thing, right? Most giving that happens to major charities has a vanity component.
Oh my God, yes.
Right? Very wealthy donors give a bunch of money and they name an award after them. Or they give a bunch of money and they name a building after them.
The building or the bricks are after, you know, you walk by and the bricks, you know, in a hospital, they all have names on. Yeah.
There's always something, names there's always something tied into that. And sure, is that like, is that being, you know, slightly self-involved maybe to have that done? Sure, whatever. But the point is it works. And when you're looking at it from the nonprofit's point of view, you have to take what works and use it because you are raising money for what is a very good cause and trying to do good work. And that's the job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's videos about around people saying, you know, call me boring or whatever, but, you know, I don't want to dump ice over my head not to pay. You're right. Just lighten up. It's too good of a thing. Focus on something else. Focus your time on something else that isn't creating a byproduct of extreme, you know, positives for this foundation and this stuff, which...
Yeah, if you look at Facebook, the number of... I wonder how many of the Ice Bucket Challengers have at least one kind of troll on there being like, this is stupid, just give money.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
And I
actually, we had it
believe...
on ours. Look at the Major League
the first one.
The first comment was like, oh, so you got out of giving money. I'm like, you didn't watch the video. We are giving money. So we did both.
Yeah, I do recommend doing both. But if you don't have the money to give, you're still helping by virally helping to spread this cause and this idea. So jump on in there, pour some ice in your head.
Yeah, three people. And like, yeah, you nominate three people and they do it. Who knows? I mean, it really is that multi-level effect, that pyramid effect, you know, which has a bad connotation, but it's really not.
It's functional
it's
effect.
It's virality.
Virality.
A pyramid scheme is, you know, how something goes viral. It's just the method by which it does that, right? One person tells their three friends, and those three people tell their three friends, and on and on. So it only helps that effect. Now, I will say that we did a really good one.
So you like it?
People show. Yeah. I liked it a lot.
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I've had, you know, it's been in my Facebook feed for
forever.
It seems like forever
yeah,
now.
30 days.
And so I've seen a lot of good ones. Who is it? Jack Casey, who dove into a garbage can?
I didn't see that.
That just looks so dangerous.
Well, he's an idiot.
It was impressive. It was really impressive.
And I say idiot in the, you know, in a positive
way. He runs,
way,
jumps off the ground
crazy.
And dives headfirst into a garbage can.
Yeah, he's
full of
insane.
Ice.
He's a crazy athlete. You need to go into his Facebook. Jack Casey. Someone from the Spinners are going to hear this. Let's get a video of him. He has these, I don't even know what to call them, bionic legs he puts on, like stilts. But like athletics.
The springy ones?
Yeah, the springy ones. And you see, he does like things on them that I would kill myself on. So yeah.
We need
a video of that. Yeah, we need a video of that.
All right.
Jack Casey.
Calling it out.
Okay.
But anyway, so yeah, get out there, try it. Be safe. There are some...
Someone did get killed.
Pretty terrible looking
mistakes
and apparently also some injuries. And
Well, always be safe with those things.
Be safe, but have fun. It's lighten up.
Yeah, let's see it. All right, you want to go into? Do we have time? How's our time?
Yeah, we're doing well.
Okay,
we're having a nice time here.
Let's. So you want to go into the coach's corner thing? Go.
Coach's
lead
corner.
The way.
All right.
I'm not exactly sure where you're going with this.
All right, so coach's corner. I was. You know, I am a tertiary football fan at best.
Right, and
I like football.
And you know that I watch it every now and then. And don't really care.
I am an Eagles fan. I live in Philly.
Of course, right.
I really believe in being a fan of the city that you're in. I support that. Though I, by requirement of my wife, who's from Baltimore, have to support Baltimore when they're not playing the Eagles and are on TV. That's a requirement. But anyway, so I'm watching SportsCenter, and they're talking about, sort of, as they always do, Johnny Manziel. And who was the other coach? I mean, the other quarterback for Cleveland?
Hoyer,
this sort of competition for that job. And the last game, they were playing a preseason game against the Washington football team. And, you know, that was the big focus of the game. And there's one point where Manziel is walking off the field. It's a Monday night football game, like tons of cameras on everything. And he's walking off the field and he flips somebody off.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few days later, the Browns announced that Hoyer is going to be the starting quarterback for them. In the performance in that game, both of them looked terrible. I didn't think there was anything convincing.
Awful.
And so I guess what the question is here is, A, obviously you want your quarterback to have more composure, right? You don't want him flipping people off. There are rules about that. The NFL has rules about obscene gestures because of broadcast and because of TV. But how much does that play into a coach's decision about starting positions and leadership roles on a team? What is the balance between skill and the sort of other less, tangible character traits, leadership, composure, drive, confidence, all that sort of stuff?
You ticked off a bunch of things in my head that I would want to hit. So when I was coaching, even before Ultimate, but especially in Ultimate, I refined these four things that a team needs, that each player needs to make a great team. First is team attitude. The second one is heart. Third is commitment. And fourth is skill. And I always like to break things down so they're the simplest I can make them, right? So then I would teach the guy and say, look, team attitude is how you act when you don't get what you want. It's so easy to be a team player when you're starting and you're the quarterback. That's easy. It's not when you're the backup quarterback or when you don't get as many passes as you want. Heart. Heart is how it is charging forward and giving your best effort even when failure is inevitable, imminent. It's coming. You're going to lose. And yet you still have the pride and dedication to act, as a top-level competitor. Very hard to do. Everyone's heart's been broken through a game, right? So heart's an active thing. You don't have a level of heart. It's what you're putting out that day that matters, right?
You just pegged my formula for a successful life. Life is all about failure. You're eventually going to fail.
Yep.
Even if it's at the very end when you die.
Right. You got to keep charging.
You got to keep charging. Look how positive. Even knowing that's coming.
That's very positive.
Yeah. Backhandedly.
So then there's commitment. Commitment is, I like to categorize as choosing the harder path for what you love. If you want to lose weight, right? If you're committed to it, then you wake up earlier and you eat better, right? And it's a harder choice. The easy choice is to eat the fun food, the tasty food. Mm. Harder choice is that. If you want to be a great football player, you don't get to go out while everybody else is partying, right? You don't get to, you miss birthdays, you miss Thanksgivings, you miss things because you're so committed to it. And then last is skill, which is what you get from perfect practice, right? When you practice something perfect, you become extremely skilled at it, or, the more as close to perfect as possible is what you want. So with what you said there, I'm going to jump to another thing is I was watching Hard Knocks, which is on HBO. They go behind the scenes for football teams. And there were the Atlanta Falcons. And I was disappointed in the Atlanta Falcons. They weren't nearly disciplined enough to compete with the teams that are extremely disciplined. Right? They were sloppy. And their coaches were a bit sloppy. Lots of things in there were sloppy. And they're high level. Let's remember, they're not bad.
Right.
But compared actually to, if you looked at the Patriots, right? And how they run the ship, how what the expectations, and how they control everything. How are you going to compete with them if you aren't where they're at? So to hit to that is the Patriots and Bill Belichick. What I would say makes him such an incredible coach. Forget the fact that he's an outstanding strategist and all this other good stuff. It's that he teaches, and that whole team teaches about the controlling of emotions. So they're never losing it, right? Because when someone makes you upset, and this is common in football, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's fights in football every down. This is a tough, tough, tough sport. So they get you going back and forth. They get you nervous. They get your nerves worked up, and now you're screaming and yelling. And they teach that if I, as a wide receiver, if I can get the cornerback frustrated, right? If I can get him angry, then he can't think for the next play. If he can't think for the next play, well, now I got him.
Right? Yeah.
And so their control of emotions is outstanding.
And imagine if you could do that to the quarterback.
Exactly.
To the key pivot of the team.
So what Manziel showed, to come and bring it all the way back to Manziel, right, is that when he flipped the bird running away, he showed that he couldn't control his emotions, right, and that they were getting to him. Right. So it was both. The other team saw him and said, oh, good. We got to you because you're listening to us, which they told him that he wasn't good enough to play in this league.
They told him the guys here are faster and stronger. This isn't college anymore, or something like that.
Yeah, which it isn't.
Yeah.
And he was trying that stuff. But he also showed his coaches that he can't handle that right now. And that is why Manziel is behind the curve. Because Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, when they came out, who were incredible, their business, their emotions were tight, their skill was tight, how they handled themselves, their attitude, their heart, their commitment, all of those things were in line. And Manziel, you know, if I was coaching him, I would say, we have issues here, right? We have issues here. Your focus on what you need to do is in the wrong place. So we'll see. I wouldn't have my chips down on him, though. I would be worried about him right now.
Yeah.
And his performance was awful. I mean, you know, I'm a huge football fan. Those throws, I would put you out there and I would think you would do the same thing. I mean, some of the throws were just awful. It was a terrible lack of focus.
Yeah. Yeah. It was more or less what I expect you to say. I liked the breakdown of the traits, though. And I think that, you know, in any sport, there's other elements to being a perfect player, a really good player. You always have other elements, particularly as pressure gets higher. In low pressure situations, sort of the highest skilled player is going to kind of rise to the top more easily. But when pressure comes aboard, and when the level of play is there's more parity in the level of play, you're getting tested on other levels. It's not just testing your skill anymore. It's testing a lot of other character traits that need to come through. So,
and you know, we forget this as the public. Always, I mean, the public's always tough on people, and the things they forget are everybody's human. Everybody's really the same. You watch Hard Knocks, you see all these football players are just like you. They just have a higher pressure job with a lot more eyes watching, but they're just like you. They're sad. They're happy. They get lazy. They want to go home. In fact, one of the things they said in this Hard Knocks episode is guy says, one of the coaches says, let's get this drill and go home. And it bothered me because I'm like, that's your job. Doesn't get to say that. Your job is about when you don't go home, but whatever, that's them. But you know, we forget those things that they're just like us, you know, but athlete, the life of an athlete is just crazy.
So give me your prediction then for Manziel, particularly just as a little side thing here. Is he gonna make that starting job this year? Is he gonna sit the bench this year?
Hoyer is so bad, I don't know. So if I were the coach, well, I'll give you two. If I were the coach, I would sit Manziel. If he's truly my first round pick, I'm not gonna lay him out to get broken right now.
Yeah.
I'm gonna teach him and I'm gonna train him. I think that this is the National Football League, and the Cleveland Browns got to sell tickets, and he'll play, and he'll be out of this league in 2 years.
Wow!
So, or be a backup somewhere.
Big predictions.
He's on the wrong path.
Big predictions.
It's not about big. You know, all the pictures of him in Vegas and stuff. It's not about that. He was in Vegas, Andrew Luck was in the training room. You know what I mean? It's just a different life. They again, it goes back to commitment. One was choosing the harder path. One's choosing the money. And guess what? And that little money thing, it's just, I don't know. Two different personalities. One's committed. One is enjoying other things, enjoying the life. That in the end, he would trade away, all of them would, for a Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
All these guys, I would trade it all for a Super Bowl, which is not an individual award, right?
Right.
That's an award you can get sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
And all of them would trade it because that means they were on the best. And that's what competitors do. So we'll see. But yeah, he'll start. He'll start at some point this season because they need to sell tickets, and they're going to suck.
They are going to have a rough year.
They're going to have a rough year.
Judging from the looks of it, it's going to be a rough year.
It's going to be a rough year.
Sorry, Browns fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see, though.
The Browns, by the way, a little aside, do you know where their name comes from?
Of course I do.
Do you?
No.
So it's not the color, as it's going to be. It's from brownies, which are these tiny little sprite-like, mischievous elf creatures. And their original helmet actually had a little sprightly elf creature on it called a brownie. And then it got shortened to the Browns, and they went with the helmet that is actually one of my favorite football helmets. Just that.
So clean.
Yeah, so clean, so simple. Love it. But yeah, that's the origin of the Browns. So a little side trivia note for you.
Their fan club is called the Dog Pound, so they're just, what is going on there?
They're a, it's a very confusing.
But I still like it.
Best of luck to them, though.
All right, do we have to get on to our interview with Sean?
Yeah, it looks like we're about at that point. So we pre-recorded this interview with Sean, and you know, I want to say a couple little things before we get into it about Ulti Photos and our relationship with them and how that works, because I think it's very cool. We're very fortunate to have that. So what's interesting about Ulti Photos is they're obviously a photography group completely focused on Ultimate. They shoot all of our games with at least 2 camera people at each game to get as much coverage as we can. Obviously, the championship game, we had a lot more. And they also shoot Ultimate events. So if you have a tournament or, you know, your team is playing a game that you would like covered, they will they'll come out and cover that event for you for a fee and then make those images available to friends and family and things like that. So good services there. They've been a great partner to us. And their photography has, you know, started to show up in some cool places. The men's fitness thing from Germany, which is weird, but it was a full 2-page spread in a magazine in Germany. Beautiful imagery. You know, we've used them in pretty high profile places, like on bus ads and subway ads, and, you know, on the packaging.
All over our websites. Yeah. I mean, come on, they're everywhere.
The packaging that Innova did for the disc that's hanging in Dick's Sporting Goods and EMS stores. So their photography has been a key driver to the progression of our brand, and will continue to be.
And a lot of the people, a lot of Ultimate players we know, you are spoiled by Ulti Photos. These guys, I mean, Brian Caniff is out at Summer League shooting with a camera that is outrageous. I mean, it looks like a weapon. Yeah, I mean, that's not a hobby. That's a serious piece of equipment, and he's a serious professional. So, you know, you're spoiled by the shots they take. So, I'm such a huge fan. Looking forward to this season, getting them more good pictures.
Yeah, very, very much looking forward to it. Now, without further ado, we will move on to our interview.
All right, we're here with Sean Carpenter of Ulti Photos. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
And he's looking pretty sharp, Nick, in his Philadelphia Spinners custom jersey.
Yeah, I like that. I like that with the Carpenter on the back. It's nice.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Very sharp. Okay. So as we all know, you are with Ulti Photos now. So give us the story. How did you get involved with them?
So I was friends with Kevin Chang, who played for the Spinners in their first year of existence.
Know him very well.
We actually played pickup together back when he was going to Westchester U. And I saw him post something saying that he was playing professional Ultimate. And I said, that's a thing? I said, this is great. You have to get me on the field. So he reached out to you and Doc. And you guys said, sure, come on down, shoot a game. Came on the field, absolutely loved it. You know, at the time I was shooting, I've shot some stuff professionally, but I had done some sports. So I'd done football, high school football and stuff like that. So I had some of the equipment to do some shooting, but definitely not, you know, nearly the level of equipment that I have now. And I look back at the shots and, you know, get a lot of those boring handler shots, you know, because Ultimate is hard to shoot. It's a different sport from many of the other ones.
Yeah, so let's just for a moment then, you know, for the nerds in our audience, maybe can you tell us a little bit about what kind of equipment you're shooting with right now? Give us a little package overview, as it were.
Sure. I think I have a terrific Ultimate setup, and every time I look over at some of the other guys, I confirm it. So I shoot with a Nikon D4, and I have a Sigma 120-300 f/2.8 lens. So what you'll see, a lot of the guys that walk around with those gigantic lenses, they're usually either 300mm or 400mm fixed focus lenses. So you can't zoom in and out with them. Mine is essentially at the 300mm side. It's the same as one of their 300s, but I get to zoom back out. So Ultimate is a sport where there's a lot of crisscrossing action and a lot of, you know, it goes from far to near in an instant. These guys can throw it all the way down the field in just a second or two. So, you know, I get away with just having the one lens because I'm able to zoom a lot of the other guys are carrying around, like I said, either a 300 millimeter or 400 millimeter lens, and then they'll have like a 70 to 200, where when it gets too close for the long lens, they'll switch to the other camera, but that makes them have to carry around two cameras. So I like my setup. It's still, the lens looks gigantic, and you know, I hand hold it all game. So I definitely have been beefing up so that I, you know, fit into these Puma jerseys looking nice and buff.
Now, I want you, first of all, thank you very much for that. And I also want you to know that I have no idea what he just said. Okay. There was just some numbers. I think I could say the same thing. Like, I have a 3120 times 6 with a 8 zoom. That sounds right.
You got to get an F in there.
And an F, right.
Yeah.
What I can say from my experience with you, Sean, is that when you showed up, you had a little itty-bitty camera, but now you got a big camera. And that's what it's about, right? The bigger camera, the better you are, right? It's like a ranking system for photographers.
That's right. You know, it's the status symbol on the end of it.
Okay, so I got some questions, because there's a lot of people who aspire to take photos like you guys do, and you take incredible photos. I've watched your work too grow. I mean, you have got some amazing photos. Who was it that got the Brian Marshall layout from last year? That was you.
Yeah,
right?
That was mine.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. That's a ridiculous shot. So I think a lot of people out there aspire to take photos like you can take, but you know, maybe they don't know just some of the basics. And so here's questions I have as someone who doesn't know anything. How many pictures do you take in a game? How many times are you snapping the shutter?
If I can, about the Brian Marshall picture first.
Oh,
by
sure.
The way,
I'd love to hear.
I ran into Patrick Deviney, who was the defender in that shot, after I took it and posted it. And it kind of, that was the first shot that really, for me, went, you know, kind of viral in an MLU sense. And he said to me, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, you know, I always expected that I would be on the cover of the MLU page, but I didn't expect it was going to be in that way.
The look on his face in it, too. He just looks stunned as Brian Marshall is completely vertical, 4 feet off the ground.
Absolutely. And then first game of this year, DC, when DC came up to Philly, I did get a shot of Patrick Deviney going over top of Brian Marshall for a score. And we exchanged some conversation about that, too. He was pretty happy about getting a little payback on that one. What was the question?
he loves to talk about the photos.
Yeah. Wasn't he just telling us that we get a little off topic in our podcast?
He was saying, hey, can we keep it on topic?
He said that before we started here. So
his camera's so big, he's gotten cocky. Okay. How many times do you snap the shutter in a game? How many pictures are you taking?
It definitely varies by shooter. Some can have upwards of, say, 1,200 shots in a game. sometimes I can be a little more judicious at times and get it down to about, you know, 500 or 600 in a game.
So 500 or 600 times you're snapping the shutter. How many pictures do you expect to get out of those 500 that are worth worth posting or viewable, I should say?
Well, here in the shooters here in Philly, so me and Brian Caniff, and actually we added Paul Andrus for a couple of our last games. We tend to be maybe a little more critical than some of the other shooters. I hope to get 10. If we can get, say, 10 to 18 photos for the whole game, that would be fantastic. And that's, you know.
And is that between you guys or you?
Just individually.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe 8 or 9 per team would be great. You know, it'd be great to have an even distribution of good shots of each team. But, you know, no more than 9 or 10 for each team, for each shooter.
And a shout out to Brian Caniff, by the way, who's just a phenomenal photographer. It seems like he's been doing it forever and like kind of been setting the bar.
It does, and he has. He and Scoble out west, you know, and Kevin LeClaire has been lighting it up for the past several years. You know, and they all were, the high watermark for ultimate photography, and I think that they helped everyone else get better. And then I think it's fun to watch, too, because as everyone else gets better, then they get better. And then, you know, it's the high tide lifting all boats, if you will. I think we as Ulti Photos photographers have definitely gotten better over the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And big props, too, to Kevin LeClaire kind of, you know, running the whole ship. So it's very well done. Okay, I got more questions. We talk about things like, and I really don't know what these means, but like f-stop and like the how fast the shutter goes. Can you give an idea for that? Like, what's the, like, you know, depth of field, depth of focus, maybe even explain it in a short, sweet thing and say, what do you aim for a good, you know, sports ultimate shot?
Well, so for ultimate, we tend to try to keep our shutter speed faster than 1/500th of a second. If you start to get slower than that, these guys move so quick, their hands are moving so quick, they throw the disc so hard that their hands will be blurry and the disc will be blurry. So we have to keep it as much as we can faster than 1/500th of a second. That's really amazing to
that
think about.
Doesn't sound possible.
I know. I mean, our shots, you can see the disc bending when they're throwing it. Like, they throw with such force that you can see it comes like a taco, you know? So that's the effect on the disc. So in order to keep it that fast, we generally try to shoot our lenses wide open. So not stopping down at all, whatever the fastest aperture is for that lens in order to generate the fastest shutter speed.
Right. Cause you need as much light into the camera as possible. That's the way to think about it.
Absolutely.
Right? And that's the only way you're going to be able to shoot at, God, that sounds way too fast. 1/500th of a second. That means you could shoot 500 times and 1 second would be gone. Do I have that right? Is that possible? Okay. Okay, so that's very interesting. I noticed that Scoble especially gets these shots that have this amazing. Is it depth of focus? Is that what?
Yeah. You get the really short focal range.
Yeah, shallow depth
blurred background. Shallow depth of field.
Shallow depth of field, which look amazing. How does she do that? How do you get the focus on the player? Is it kind of just shooting a ton and getting lucky? Like, I don't even understand how it's possible.
Did you just suggest that Scoble just gets lucky? No. She is. She's
in the ultimate world.
She's not working for us anymore. We just lost Scoble. Thanks.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Come on.
So she is. She shoots with a 400mm f/2.8 lens. So to put that in perspective, I would guess at, you know, 30 yards from her, that 400mm lens is going to show a couple inches in focus and that's it. So everything else in front of it and behind it is going to be blurred out nicely. You know, it's really the pinnacle lens for getting that sort of effect. And it's a killer lens for shooting ultimate too. So the lens does play a factor in that. I think with Scoble's shots, she's got such a good eye. She can frame what's happening. Like, there's some where you see her shots of people pulling the disc, and it's like, wow, you know? And that's such a mundane routine thing. It happens every game, you know, 20, 30 times a game, and no one else has replicated that sort of emotion in that shot. So... it's the eye, but the lens does play a part in that.
Wow, very, very impressive. Okay, you have any questions? I'm taking.
You're doing a nice job. I'm going to let you.
I'm kind of really enjoying this.
Yeah, I can tell. I like to watch you ask questions about something you literally know nothing about.
I feel like I know a lot about it now. Yeah. If I could just get an f/3.5, which would be so much better than an f/0.2. Okay, so now there's the work on the field. You're taking the pictures. When you get back home, how much work is behind the scenes?
So that's where the bulk of the work actually comes in. But we have been working on getting faster at it because, you know, with the social media, getting good quality images out as quickly as possible is really the focus for what we're doing, especially with the MLU. So we've gotten a lot better. You'd be probably pretty surprised when you sit down behind me and watch me page through photos where it's no, 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 yes, no, 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 yes. So, you know, we use tools to cull it down and then do all the tagging. So typically within an hour or 2 hours, we will have those 20 shots that we like the best.
And you're not doing any correction on them, are you, or are you?
Minimal corrections. So, I'll generally adjust for exposure. If it's a little too light, a little too dark, I'll bring that up. Or if I need to crop it in some, I'll do cropping. Generally, if you look at, say, some amateur work versus some pro work, the pros know how to focus on just the image, on just the showing the photo of what's actually happening there, showing the emotion of what's there, and kind of getting rid of the stuff on the edges. So I will do some cropping to make a more impactful photo. But cropping and then making it lighter and darker, that's pretty much all
wow.
I do.
Wow, that's well.
Yeah, one of the things I've noticed too, and I'm wondering how much you guys look at this. You know, I know that Kevin, through me, gets a lot of sort of specifics in terms of requests, and I'm wondering how much that gets down to you guys. But we're looking now, like this year we looked a little bit more for some audience and some fan shots, and we saw a lot more of those. We also looked for shots that captured sponsor signage and things like that behind plays, and we got some great ones of those. I'm wondering how much you think about that stuff actually in the game, or if it gets kind of like pushed to the back a little bit as you're just trying to get the right shot and the right play.
So those were two different questions. does the list get down to us of what you want? Absolutely. You know, Kevin is great at taking in that information, you know, digesting it, and then giving it back to us in a format that, you know, what we'll do is we'll actually print out the shot list of what we need to get prior to the game. That being said, once stuff starts happening, you know, it's kind of hard to remember to focus on stuff. When you have people laying out for a disc, I'd hate for that to happen while you're, say, you know, looking up in the crowd. As much as I love the crowd shots, you know, I like those layout shots. So you always hate missing shots. Case in point was, you know, for the championship game, I think it would have been great if we could have gotten some more pictures of what the MLU staff was doing. You know, I mean, you guys put on an awesome show for that day, and in the true word of awesome in my mind.
Thanks.
And
I like that. Somebody liked it.
I loved it. And if as a matter of fact, if you want to have regular season games there all next season, that'd be great.
Agreed.
With me. What a great venue.
Agreed.
So, I think, Jeff, it was you that came up and asked, you know, someone else might have asked us, hey, can you get some of the cameramen? Once the action started, I completely forgot until I was sitting at home and I was like, oh, I probably should have looked backwards and gotten some of those shots. So it's, you know, we try our best. Hopefully we hit most of the check boxes.
Oh, you guys do a great job. Okay. I got more questions. Because, you know, it's fun to hear what the people who were behind the lens, what they want. So how about favorite players? Who are your favorite players to shoot?
So favorite players to shoot. I definitely like the defensive shots. So I'm a defensive type of player. The Del Rico Johnsons, the Matt Essers, you know, I would have loved to have covered Morgatron this year. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, he's pretty much a highlight reel.
Yeah, yeah. Or, I mean, you know, Patrick Lindsay. We had the buses wrapped here in Philly with a defensive shot of Patrick Lindsay acting like Superman. You know, I love that sort of stuff. So that being said, and I love all those guys. I love, you know, all that sort of action type stuff. But guys like Brandon Malachek, he's great to photo. Like, he looks like a robot out there on the field, you know? And he could be doing nothing, and you take a shot of him, and it ends up looking cool. On the converse side, there are some great players that I find it incredibly hard to take good photos of. People like David Brandoff. Like, he's great, but he tends to get himself like open and in the right place all the time. So all you get are shots of him looking like he's playing catch. You know, it doesn't look very.
Suck more, Brandon. he'll be somebody.
Yeah. Get out of position more and do that. You know, even players like Alan Kolick, like it wasn't until I think the last two games that I shot him this year that I got him doing anything other than just catching, you know, a straight dump pass from somebody. So, These guys who are so good, even Jeff Graham, sometimes he's hard to, because, you know, he just gets open. So when you're taking photos of him, he literally looks like he's playing catch.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought about it that way. Yeah, I think with Kolick, that 500th of a second might be a little slow to keep up.
Is I think about like a tempo thing. He's got a weird tempo. So you're probably used to snapping for a certain player, but he just does things on his own, beat of his own drum. So you'd miss it. You know what I mean? Like, he throws weird. He just throws out of nowhere. It's a good point. Very interesting.
So along those same lines, you've had an opportunity to shoot at a few different venues for us, which is cool. And I'm wondering what your favorite place to shoot was. And then maybe your second favorite, because I bet favorite's going to be PPL Park.
PPL
as
Park.
As it was for everybody. Absolutely. So maybe like your favorite regular season, and then we can talk about PPL Park and why that was so much fun.
Right. So this year I got a chance to shoot at D.C., Philly, New York. Last year I shot at D.C., Philly, New York, and Boston. And I would say for the regular season, I liked Sweeney Field the best. I thought the first game that the Spinners had at Sweeney Field, where we just had fans lined up on the hillside behind the, it was great. It was like, it gave me, you know, practically, you know, 180 degrees of capable shooting, where I thought the backgrounds were going to be awesome. And I love that venue. That being said, I'd have to go with Cardinal Stadium was also really nice. You know, they did
that's
a good
DC.
Job.
So Sweeney Field is the Spinner Stadium and Cardinal is DC Current. Right?
DC. Okay. And they did a great job of getting people out. I like, you know, that they give the fans all those cowbells. So you get the cowbell pictures and stuff like that. So that was a fun venue to shoot too. As much as I love New York's venue and the fact that you get up on top of a roof of a building to play a game of Ultimate, looking out at the New York skyline, that's a tough stadium to shoot in because you have stands only on one side. And then if you're, you know, standing on the near sideline, it's really tight. Like there's not a lot of room there at all.
Yeah.
First time I went there, I remember thinking to myself, you know, these cement pillars at the end of the end zone look awful close. With these guys diving the way they do, it just looked scary. But
yeah, we won't be there next year, so we're gonna have a new venue, which we can't announce yet because we don't have it locked down. But we're changing because Nick hates it for all broadcast because, like you said, all the cement pillars and the location isn't the greatest. So yeah, nothing was perfect about it. But I think the players love playing on the. Like, generally, people that are there love being on a rooftop. But, okay, we're running out of time. We got two questions. First one is, what's your favorite moment so far being with Altifotos?
Wow.
Ooh, right on the spot, right?
My favorite experience so far, I will say at the championship game here recently, we had Sandy Canetti come down. He's a New York shooter. We had Bert come down from Boston, and Brian and I were there together with Paul. I mean, what a great crew.
Yeah.
You know, and for me to see five shooters that were just, I mean, we all were awesome that day. We loved the day. You know, it's real nice to know, too, that I can focus on whatever I want to focus on, and Bert's going to get the shot, or Sandy's going to get the other shot, or Brian's going to get the other shot. So that was real terrific to know, and I think it was a great game too. Yeah, I'd have to say the championship game was definitely my favorite.
That's awesome. I love how he talked about that. He's got like his posse full, full of, you know, killer photographers. That excites me. Okay, last question for me at least, Nick. If you want to end it off. But for the new photographer who's starting out, what advice would you give him? You know, say, here's the thing you have to, here's how to start. Here's what to know.
Number one, reach out to one of us. That is definitely, if you look at my progression from being some guy that showed up on a sideline with a little camera to someone who is looking at a poster of a shot of mine in your MLU offices, you know, Brian Caniff helped me just with everything. You know, I would show up, I would send him some photos, say, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And he would say, you know, that one sucks and that one sucks and you need to get better at this and you need to get better at that. And you know, if you're open to that sort of thing, any one of us is out there as a resource to help you. You can also keep an eye out when you're following The Ultimate Sean on Twitter, that I am going to be writing an article upcoming soon on 5 tips for better sports photography. And essentially, I'm going to use everything that I've learned over the last 3 years and condense it down into 5 tips that'll help you get better.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you know, yeah. Well, obviously, I mean, we are.
It won't work for everyone, though, Jeff.
Why are you laughing? What does that mean? He was just talking about other people. He just wanted to caution other people who aren't. If you're listening, this might not work for you.
Yeah, I'll add to that too. That if you find an opportunity with one of the Ultimate Buddhist photographers or something like that to actually come out and do some shooting, we do allow some other people down in the field to take some shots and to learn the trade a little bit in some circumstances. So.
Yeah, I mean, I will say with Ulti Photos, we've done a great job at making sure that the photographers that we deliver to the MLU are top caliber photographers, you know. And you've been a great partner working with Ulti Photos as well. We genuinely appreciate all the things that you've done with us to make sure that, you know, I mean, we want to present you in the best light possible. And I think, you know, you just look to us to say, hey, do that. And hopefully we do.
Yeah, that's so far so good.
Yeah.
All right. So last question then is, what is your hope, photography wise, for what you're doing with the MLU? What do you want to see in the next few years? Like, what would be like a big milestone, do you think?
So, I mean, I think one of the unique aspects of Ulti Photos is that we're all ultimate people. You know, all the photographers are in some way connected to Ultimate itself, either playing or, you know, Sandy's son plays in that sort of way. So I think we're really just trying to focus on growing the sport. We want Ultimate to get bigger. We want, you know, that article that came out about who considers what a sport. It should be 100%. Everyone should acknowledge that this is a sport. And, you know, what I try to do, especially to people who don't know it, is I try to make sure that I'm showing people how athletic and how unbelievable these guys are that play at this level. Like, this is not just summer league level, although some of them are terrific in summer league too, but this is unbelievable action all the time. I actually, on a photo forum, I posted before the championship game some shots and said, hey, if anyone's, you know, near Philly, come out to this game, here's some shots of Ultimate, professional Ultimate. And pretty much all the responses I got back were, wait, that's something? This is unbelievable. But everyone was like, those shots look amazing. The intensity and the passion there, you know, that looks like a great thing to go and watch. So it is, and I just hope it keeps growing. I hope the MLU, you know, keeps along, gets bigger, and I hope, you know, we're partners in doing that.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I think what you guys do certainly allows us to show the passion behind it really well. It gets people closer to the players than video does, than anything else that we do, because it's a captured moment right in there. So we appreciate your guys' work, and it's been great. So tell them how to find you.
So ultifotos.com. Ultifotos is also on Facebook. And if you want to, like me, The Ultimate Sean is on Facebook, and then Twitter at The Ultimate Sean.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming out today.
Thank you, guys.
We appreciate it. That was fun.
It was a blast, Sean. Can't wait to see you on the field next season.
Terrific. Thanks, guys.
Okay, so an outstanding interview with Sean Carpenter.
Man, that was a great interview. It got a little nerdy, which I love.
You like the nerdy.
A little, it was informative.
You know the terms, too.
Yeah, there's some terminology. You get F-stops to throw some terms around. F-stops.
And T-stops.
T-stops.
Bus stops.
Y-focuses.
Yes, I like that.
Yep.
Okay, so we're finishing up, but we want to give a shout-out to a couple people. One is Jake McLernan. Did the Four More Quarters video. And I got to say, I mean, his work is all, he's a good kid.
He
comes out here very dedicated. He slept in his car on the night of the championship game so he could get the sunset and stuff like that. So talking about commitment, he's a very committed person. But his last video was the one. Like that, he put it together, and it was extremely enjoyable, and a lot of people have told me that they really enjoyed that one. So great job, Jake.
Yeah, it's titled Four More Quarters. Go over to youtube.com/MajorLeagueUltimate and check it out. It's definitely worth a watch.
And then I got another shout-out. So I was just talking with Chris Hancock, who every time I write him, not every time, but when I write him an email, I'll switch it up. I'll call him Hanky, Hankster, the big Hank man, Hankinator. So if he's listening, he'll get a chuckle out of that. But to many people's great joy, right, Friction Gloves 2.0 is on its way. And he told me a bit about them. My sample hasn't gotten here yet. which I'm angry.
Yeah, it's been a little slow coming. Right? Yeah,
but yeah, it's been like 2 days. Come on. But I can't wait to try them out and throw and see how they work. But that's gonna be big. Friction gloves is
yeah. He's talking about a little broader sizing range, right?
Now there's women's sizes
and some women's sizes.
The extra large is what's called a true extra large.
Yep, which is gonna be big.
Then the branding is different. So you know, I don't even know if I've talked with you about this yet, but we could brand both gloves with Major League Ultimate or different things, or one glove could be a team thing. So this is it's kind of neat stuff.
Yeah.
And actually, he's even offering a custom gloves.
Oh.
So it's expensive. The gloves will be $26. If you want them custom, they'll probably be more like $60 or $65. But it'd be kind of neat to have your gloves say, like, Nick's glove, or, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad dude.
Everybody's gloves say Nick's glove. It'd be really weird.
It would be weird. So, I want to give a shout-out for that, and we'll keep you posted on the new Friction Gloves 2.0 coming out.
Yeah, and then something we're going to add. We're going to talk about some new sponsors coming in whenever we get the opportunity. And so we have a couple of new people on board right now. Mainstay Investments.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great partner that came on just recently, and you're going to see them showing up a little bit in some of our content and things like that. And then we have Tomahawk Shades.
Yeah.
Which is a cool young company. They like working with growing sports leagues. I think they also work with Major League Lacrosse.
They do.
And we're really looking
they
forward.
They liked us way better.
Yeah, of course. Well, obviously. Clearly.
Yeah, the new style.
Take that, Major League Lacrosse.
Take that with your ball and your net and your stick. the new style of sunglasses is, I'm an old man because I don't get it.
Yeah, right? No.
It's these different color shades of things, but they really do look good. Like, it's a cool look. It just is funny because I feel like I should have a pair of aviators on and Tom Cruise should be standing next to me. But
yeah, I mean, obviously.
Tom Cruise today, if they made Top Gun right now, he'd have like a pair of these Tomahawk shades on. So it's just what it is.
But yeah, so they're going to be doing some custom shades for us.
I know, custom, right? Yeah, they'll each. So all teams will have branded sunglasses.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
That is pretty neat. I'm excited about that. So we're looking forward to working with them, and you'll certainly hear more about it.
Mm.
But yeah, so I think we're about out of time. As always, hit us up with your questions at Nick Darling, at Jeff Snader, at Cleats Cufflinks, or send us an email, cleatsandcufflinks@mlultimate.com. And we'll, you know, ignore it. Like, we have the questions for the last 2 weeks, apparently. But we really need to look at the questions.
Yeah, we will. But if you have good questions, you get the tweets. Use the tweeter.
We love the tweeter.
Yeah, and then we'll have some fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing.
All right, next week.
Next week, Jeffrey. Until then.
Nicholas.